McClintock,
Jason Meekum,
Jack Jones,
Estelle Ambrose,
and Tariq Young.
Welcome into the best damn sports show, period. I am your host for today. It is Estelle Ambrose. I am joined with Tariq and Ian, but we are getting right into our Nuggets reaction to Game 4. It was a little while ago, but I haven't talked to you guys since then. What a game. Game 4. The Nuggets take a 3-1 series lead over the Miami Heat. Poor Miami. You can go cry somewhere else. But, in my opinion, AG won them that game. I get Jamal had a great game, Bruce had a great game, but Aaron Gordon hitting those three massive threes and just being himself in a game that like required it. That was my biggest takeaway, was Aaron Gordon showed up, proved why he was taken so high in the draft, why he just fits in Denver perfectly, going off, staring down Miami's bench, making Miami rethink all their choices, claiming that lead, keeping it. Oh, what a game. Tariq, in your opinion, who won? Who won them that game? Which one of the guys?
I'll be honest. I'm going to go ahead and say two guys won them that game, especially with Jokic going out very early. I truly believe that Bruce Brown and Aaron Gordon won them that game, because if they didn't step up, then, you know, it'd be a 2-2 series right now. But those guys stepped up when the Nuggets needed them the best, and, you know, I can't complain. So it's hard to win on the road, but for them to go and win both games on the road, just like we were talking about the other day on the show, I said whoever will win game three was going to win the series. So now they're up 3-1.
And Ian?
Yeah, no, I would have to agree 100% with you, Estelle. Aaron Gordon just absolutely going off, finally exploiting a mismatch that we were all waiting for, shooting 11 of 15, obviously hit his three big threes. But not only that, you know, he had 7 rebounds, 6 assists. So, I mean, that's a very complete game from somebody that you were hoping to take over as that third big-time scorer, especially with MPJ going through the slump that he is. But I know we'll get into that later. But, yeah, no, I mean, Aaron Gordon, but special shout-out to Bruce Brown with 21 huge points off the bench as well.
Yeah, Bruce Brown coming off the bench. He wasn't really a bench player because he finished that game with them pulling out Michael Porter Jr., which I think is the best way. I think this is more of a Bruce Brown series than a Michael Porter Jr. series, especially when you're getting threes from Aaron Gordon, which I can't three threes is a wild number specifically for Aaron Gordon. He normally is like 0 of 2 or maybe 1 of 4, and I was just shocked one went in. I guess that's all he needed to see. He got himself going, like you said, the 7 rebounds, but also the 6 assists. He was dishing diamond to everyone as well. That's like a bad Nikola Jokic game, the 27-7-6, which is wild to say about Aaron Gordon. 27 points. He was the game high plus 29, so it just shows how much impact he had on both sides of the floor. The other guy, Bruce Brown, 21 points off the bench. I mean, he played the whole time. 4 rebounds, 2 assists, but the steal and the block coming up huge on defense, which I think has been such an important point of this series. When the Nuggets win, they hold Miami under 100. It has happened in their 3 wins so far. Who do you think is like the biggest player on defense? In my opinion, I think it's Aaron Gordon being that rock, but who in you guys' opinion is like the one helping that defense out? Tariq?
I got to agree with you on that. I truly believe the Nuggets' defensive rock right there is Aaron Gordon, because in the third and fourth quarter of that game, they held the Miami Heat to 22 points each. So I think they came up big time with Aaron Gordon. He knew he had to step up on offense but also defensively, and he's been there the whole time, this whole series, a defense guy, and then he stepped up on offense this game. So.
Yeah, I would agree. It's been AG all day. He's really been the rock. I mean, Jokic, he's able to use his size to his advantage. Murray, I mean, we've seen what happens when he's on Butler. It just hasn't really worked out in the Nuggets' favor. But having AG be able to isolate and really neutralize Miami's one big scoring threat outside of Bam Adebayo, I mean, that's huge. So I'm ecstatic. Yeah, for what
Bam,
we saw.
Bam can score all day long. Keep feeding up those tough twos. He's not making threes. He's not even attempting threes. There were times in that game where Jokic was off him a bit. Not quite in the paint, but like off him from the three-point line. And I'm like, Jokic at this, like, at this point is just taking those. Like, if the defense isn't on him there, like, he's taking those threes, and I'm like, bam, just, like, take one for funsies. I don't think mm-hmm. he shot any, and if he did, I don't think he made one. Yeah, he didn't shoot any. So it was like, I saw Jokic giving him that room, and he just didn't. But as we keep, like, kind of glossing over him, Jamal Murray, putting his name to the record books, just like Nikola Jokic has been doing all series, all playoffs long, Jamal Murray is the first ever player to have 10 assists, 10 plus assists, in their first four finals games. First player to do it. He joins, I think, Magic Johnson and Bill Russell to be like the ones who have ever done it in terms of 10 plus assists through four games. But in their first finals, no one's ever done it. It's Jamal Murray. This has been an insane run for him. There's no way he doesn't make all NBA next year at all.
Yeah, no, I would have to agree with that. I mean, obviously, Jamal... Sorry about that. Jamal did not have the best shooting night, shooting 5 of 17. So, you know, still having him be able to find a way to contribute to the team. And obviously, that's a huge statement for him, especially being the point guard that he is. I mean, that's got to shoot him up a lot of teams' boards now. We have to start recognizing Jamal for his ability, not just scoring like we saw in the bubble, but now he's starting to develop that all-around game. And it's huge for the Nuggets right now.
I also wonder how much of him not shooting was his hand, because I don't know if you guys saw the floor burn he had. I think Mike Singer tweeted it out. He has like a quarter-sized floor burn on his thumb, and I'm like, that can't feel good. So like, he was dishing in diamond. Again, he had the 10 assists, which was, or 12 assists that game, no turnovers. And I wonder if that's part of it, is it's like, instead of him shooting, it, like passing it doesn't hurt as bad. Yeah, Tariq, how's your... You watched the game.
So...
Jamal Murray.
I would have never thought to see Murray as a passer like that. He's been a maestro. Like, what could I say? He's dishing it to everybody. So it's going to be pretty interesting to see how this finals ends and to see how much he develops in the offseason to next season to see if he'll keep doing what he's doing. Because everyone knows Murray as a scorer. But if he has scoring and passing in his bag, he's going to be a very dangerous player next year. And he could – most likely be an all-star, so.
I mean, for sure. There was lists coming out. I was like, he is now, like, one of the top, like, 10 point guards, like, currently in the NBA, which I thought he was already on that list. But people are adding him. I'm seeing his name pop up a lot more in terms of national media. But the only reason why he had to play all those minutes, get all those assists, he played 43 minutes. And normally him and Jokic are playing similar amount of minutes, but Jokic in that game only played 37. He got in foul trouble. He got his like fourth foul, like the 9-ish minute mark in the game. He had to go out. Michael Malone said it. Those minutes earlier this season have gone horribly, disastrously. Non-Nikola Jokic minutes is always like hope and pray they only go like -5 in those. But for whatever reason in this game, it went so well, I think a big part of that was Aaron Gordon. I think the other big part was Jamal Murray getting everyone involved. He kind of became the Jokic. He was passing. He was keeping everyone engaged. Jokic was engaged from the bench, probably the happiest I've ever seen him. Those videos were wild. I'm like, you don't show this emotion, like, ever. Like, did you just find out you're having another kid or something? Like, it was wild. He was, like, slamming the towel down. And I'm like, at least he's happy for him. But, like, is that a thing that Miami's going to try to do in these next games, is getting Jokic in the foul trouble, try to do it again? Even though it went so well this time, do they think they're going to try to push it again?
I mean, I feel like that's got to be where Miami's going to be looking at, because if you can get the two-time, honestly, should have been three-time reigning MVP out off the court, you have to trust that the rest of the team is going to carry those numbers. And we were fortunate enough to see that in game four, with obviously AG going off, Bruce Brown going off as well. They helped maintain that body of work. I don't know if we're going to see another game like that. Obviously, it would be huge if it did. But yeah, no, when Jokic is off the court, not going to lie, I was freaking out a little bit. And then the team was just going off. Felt so much more comfortable, and especially when he's in foul trouble in the third quarter as well, because he picked up his fifth and we still had 4.5 minutes in the third. It really made you wonder if we were going to come back to Denver tied at 2, because that was my initial feeling. But again, huge kudos to Malone and the game plan. Just obviously whatever that he was calling up, they were finding wide open shots.
I would say, as a team that is undersized like the Miami Heat is, they've struggled this whole series trying to figure out how to stop the Nuggets, because of course they have an oversized team. Their team is smaller than the Nuggets team. So I think by figuring out trying to get away to have Jokic get in foul trouble, I think that really helps you out a lot, because now you're like, oh, okay, if we get him out of the game, they got to figure out who else they go to facilitate the ball. Even though it hasn't worked out because Murray has been phenomenal as a passer while Jokic has been out, you still have to take the lead scorer and the star out of the game to try to get his teammates off track. So
I think that's one of the main reasons why Miami is having so much trouble with the Nuggets is, one, their size, but two, they kind of have two superstars. Like, the way Jamal Murray's performing, I saw, like, a lot of comparisons to Steph's first finals game, like, things of how similar they are in scoring and whatnot, and, like, rebounds, assists, all that. They're incredibly similar between their two, like, finals so far. So I think that's one of the reasons is Miami, you got to pick your poison. It's not like with Miami, Denver can be like, okay, we're shutting down Jimmy. Bam can get his. If you shut down Jokic, Jamal's going to get his and then pass to everyone. Or if you shut down Jamal Murray, it's, okay, you're going to let Nikola Jokic go off, and they don't have the size to do both.
Right. Yeah, and one other thing that I heard on the way in, the Miami Heat, they double-teamed Jamal Murray 12 times. Jamal committed zero turnovers during that time. The Nuggets went 8 for 12 during that stretch and went 4 of 5 from 3. So, I mean, at this point, you almost have to be at, like, plan P just to even see if you can even try to slow these guys down.
Absolutely. Up next, I'm going to be telling you why I think the two-man game is unstoppable. We've touched into it, but even more, I think, like, any type thing the Miami Heat are going to do is not going to work. We'll be right back on the Best Damn Sports Show, period.
So I'm taking a trip over to Tibet, you know, see the sights, climb a hill or two. But I remember, oh man, I got one guy out here who I actually know. So I give an old ringy dingy to the Lama, you know, the Dalai Lama, his laminescence, flowing robes, grace, bald, striking, really. I says to the Lama, hey, you remember that round I caddied for you down in Shangri-La? Well, apparently some station out in Lakewood taped the whole thing. Oh. See, the Lama's a big hitter. Nailed two eagles in a row that day. Well, he says, what station could have possibly gotten all the way out to my sacred holy lands, the Shangri? I says it was none other than GoMileHigh.com, Lama. They got the best sports coverage in the state. The Lama actually tips me this time, 2-1. So he pretty much stiffed me again. But I got him hooked on GoMileHigh.com. So I got that going for me, which is nice.
That's great.
GoMileHigh.com.
Palo Alto Media School, hands-on learning in one of the most exciting career fields out there. Internship opportunities are limitless. We have 3 on-campus radio stations, 2 TV stations, and you'll have the opportunity to participate in projects like doing play-by-play live from a sporting event or the 48-hour film project. We have after-graduation career placement assistance and financial aid for those who qualify. Check us out online at ColoradoMediaSchool.com, on Facebook and Instagram, and CO Media School on Twitter and Snapchat. You can also call 303-937-7070.
If it's great radio you're looking for, then you're in the right place. Because at GoMileHigh.com, we have tons of shows discussing sports, news, politics, entertainment, community affairs, and much, much more.
Awesome!
And don't forget, if you miss out on one of your favorite shows, you can always access our archived episodes at GoMileHigh.com on your own time.
If I'm here and you're here, doesn't that make it our time?
Go Mile High, your college radio for sports, movies, and games. Run by students, for students, and more.
Let's see what they can do here from the 5.
Sports news, live games, and discussions about just about everything.
Disney turning their rides in their parks into movies.
So close, so many times, and to have that snatched away.
Come and join us every day for your favorite shows, only at GoMileHigh.com.
Hey, Colorado sports fans, you're listening to GoMileHigh.com, a student-operated station live from the Colorado Media School studios here in Belmar, giving you a different perspective on all things current.
Stop torturing yourself, man! Live in the now!
So stay tuned to see what's coming up next on GoMileHigh.com.
Colorado's sports lifestyle.
Showing.
Don't touch that dial. You are locked in to the best damn sports show, period.
Welcome back to the best damn sports show, period. Before the break, I was talking about how I don't think Miami can stop this two-man game, can't stop the Nuggets in general. I was looking at an article earlier. It was all about how the Heat can win game five, maybe push it to a game six. And one of their things was, we need to put size on Aaron Gordon. That was one of their ways to stop. My first question to that is, how? Who? What size? No offense, he's the size of Bam. He's 1 inch shorter and like 20 pounds lighter. We don't know how accurate that is. Things can fluctuate. Aaron Gordon is basically Bam in terms of size. Who are you taking? Like, who? What size are you putting on him?
Your only hope was Kevin Love. That is literally your only hope. And then after that, it's a size mismatch there. And again, you know, this is what we were totally expecting from Aaron Gordon to finally expose that. And he has greatly. So I don't know what Miami's going to do because you can't be putting Kevin Love on Nikola Jokic.
Cody Zeller, like, yeah. You see how that goes every time. Yeah. Not well.
Yeah, no. So it's going to be interesting to see what Miami does tonight if they just traditionally just decide to go complete small ball to go against the big size. Or are they just going to say, screw it, this is what got us here, we're going to go down in a blaze of glory.
I would say you got to figure something out. Like, you're down 3-1. If you got to, you just got to put the legend Kevin Love in. You know, he's
the legend.
He's been down 3-1 before, so.
Shoot, put in Udonis Haslam for size.
You got to figure something out. It's the playoffs now. You're in the finals. You're one win away from losing everything. So you just got to come up with something. This is where you dig deep and fight through adversity. I don't know. The Heat, they're just going to have to figure something out.
Yeah, dig deep. I don't know how much deeper you can dig, in my opinion. But then, like, the two-man game, I think Jimmy Butler had a quote where he was like, we just got to watch a lot of film on that. I don't know if you guys have been following. The two-man game has been around for them basically since the bubbles, when it, like, really started to form, really had that gelling energy, probably a little bit before that. And then, of course, the devastation happens. Jamal Murray gets hurt. We have to live in purgatory for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. Everyone's saying the Nuggets aren't good enough. Jokic isn't that good. And now they're seeing the fruits of the labor. I want to know, like, how do you think they can stop the pick and roll? Because it seems like that's their goal tonight, is to stop, according to Jimmy.
If you're expecting me to have an answer for that, I'm going to sit here in silence because there is no answer to it that Miami has. I mean, you can continue to try to put Butler on Jamal. That seemed to work a little bit in game two. But to continue and hold that up for not only tonight and then have to go back home, try to do it again, just to do it three straight games, you can't contain it forever.
Exactly.
It's just, you can't. And it's the beauty of it all because, I mean, you were saying that we really saw it starting to come to fruition there in the bubble before the injury. You go all the way back to, I want to say 2014 or so, and they were doing a world game.
Yeah,
and they were even
clip.
Pulling the PNR there, and it was Murray and Jokic, and we were blessed to get them both. So it just feels like it's a natural
chemistry.
They
were each other.
Well, yeah, no, but I mean, just in hindsight, you just have to look back at that and be like, oh my God, we can see it then. And to see where it was then to where it is now, chef's kiss.
You can go.
I was going to say, I truly believe at this point, like, they're a two-headed monster, so it's hard to stop. They got a good thing rolling. Like, I truly believe it's hard to stop something that's good. You just got to play ball and you got to play disciplined. Like, you have one of the best coaches, Eric Spoelstra, so I believe he's truly going to come up with something offensively for you to score points, but also I think he'll come up with something defensively. One of them, I truly believe, one of them will be facilitating. Because you're gonna see a bunch of double teams, but like I said, you just gotta play discipline at this point.
So that was my next thought, is like the double team, right? Who are you pulling the double team off of? Because if you pull it off of Michael Porter Jr., you know he's gonna get hot. Like, his career is insane in terms of 3-point shooting. Like, I guess you could hope until he gets one in, but how many times can you leave him wide open? And then the other side is I think you take from KCP, which I guess would be like the more favorable, but he is also a lockdown three-point shooter, and he even cuts more. Mike's doing a little bit more, but cuts and like knows how to read the game and has been in this situation before. So that's why like the double team, like you have to play disciplined and whatnot, but like you got to pull from somewhere and you got to hope that the Nuggets don't find your coverages, which is something that, especially this year, everyone's finding the open guy. It doesn't matter who it is. They're finding the open guy. Mm-hmm. And I just think the double teams aren't going to work for them.
I think they're willing to take the risk when it comes to KCP or MPJ because just how they've played this series. I think they're willing to risk it long as after a while they don't have more than 10 points. So if they're shooting terribly, I think they'll live with it. But if they're on fire, then I think they're just going to have to adjust and figure out something else other than the double team. So
yeah. Again, like you were mentioning, I mean, you take it off of MPJ, he's bound to get hot eventually, you know. I mean, we saw him come to life a little bit with Game 4, obviously just not from 3 like everybody was hoping. But eventually that shot would fall, and like you had mentioned with KCP, that honestly might be the best move, simply because, again, MPJ with the pure size, you sacrifice a little bit of size and force it to KCP. He's maybe not as lethal of a shooter from 3 as MPJ, but he's more consistent right now than MPJ. So, I mean, if you're Miami, I would have to think that you'd have to pull one of your defenders off of one of those two.
The only other thing is Tyler Hero was upgraded to questionable from, I'm assuming, doubtful or out.
Active. It is all hands on deck.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. He was upgraded to questionable from either, I think he was out beforehand. Mm-hmm. So they were upgrading him from this game. He has his broken hand that I think he suffered in game one of round one. I know the last time he played was game one, round one, like after the playing games. But I don't know if that's when he suffered it or what happened there. Sorry, I don't follow the Heat. But
yeah, he got it in
was it during the game?
That game one against Milwaukee.
Milwaukee. I know it happened in that game because he hasn't played in 56 days. Do you think he plays tonight? And if he helps, how do you think he's going to help? Because personally, I don't think he's going to help. He has to play in altitude after not playing in 56 days. Players say, like, coming off a week is hard. 56 days without, like, real conditioning, because they always say, like, the best conditioning is just playing with a broken hand, and I don't know how it's going to work. I don't think it's going to go well.
Yeah, so Tyler Hero is officially active. Eric Spoelstra did come out and say it is all hands on deck. No pun intended there. But, I mean, you're absolutely right. There's 2 months of no active playing time, and your team's back is against the wall. It feels more like a desperation move from Miami to go ahead and activate him rather than just be like, okay, you know, let's just get through tonight, and if we get to game 6, let's bring you in at home. But, I mean, if your back's against the wall like this, it feels like Spoelstra is just going to do anything he can just to try to get back to Miami on Thursday.
Yeah, I think he's at the point now where it's just like, it's win or go home, so you got to do anything in your power to force another game. And I think at this point, you play Tyler Hero, but don't give him too much of a workload. Like, he's coming off a broken hand, so I say give him at least 20 minutes. If he's not doing good, then keep him out of the game. But a hand injury, especially on your shooting hand, is very hard to come back from, especially in short time. So I know he's had 56 days off, but at the same time, if it's not working, then I think you just should sit on the bench instead of – I know he's going to try to force some threes because he's a three-point shooter, but I feel like you can only do so much.
Yeah, I was listening to Altitude SR, and they were talking about how KCP and Bruce Brown especially love to go for the little swipes to get the steals. And sometimes you hit a hand, you get the foul and whatnot, but they're pretty strong dudes. Like, imagine your hand broke and then just getting swat. Like, that can't feel good. So I wonder if there's any reservations there, or if it happens like early in the game or something, he's like, yeah, I can't play through this pain. Like, if that's how he does it. I agree with you, Tariq, about like it is all hands on deck. So like, you gotta hope he makes some threes, I guess. But who is he taking minutes away from? Because it's not like, I mean, I guess you could take it away from anyone, because none of them have been playing Grace.
I mean, he's probably going to slide back in, probably take back over the Gabe Vincent minutes.
Yeah, I'm like, I think he has.
Or Caleb Martin.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those. Yeah. It's a whole bunch of dudes on that team. Like, any of them can get hot. Any of them can go cold, as we've been seeing. speaking of guys playing cool, we kind of talked about it earlier. Michael Porter Jr. is in a shooting slump. I think we can officially call it that. He is 3 of 22 from 3 in the finals so far. Not great numbers for like a career like 38% shooter, but he's finding it other ways. Game 2, I think, was his lowest of low, like unbearable. He wasn't trying. You could see it in the body language. And then at the beginning, in the first half of game 3, it was very similar. Very low on himself, like not doing it. End of game 3, and then especially in game 4, he saw it wasn't falling. He started cutting. He started dunking. He started like actually moving and like getting himself into the game. Yes, he was still taken out in the fourth quarter, but he's getting himself back into it. There was some in that, especially in game 4, where it was like an easy dunk or an easy layup, and it just went in and out. And I'm like, this guy can't even buy a tool right now. Like, it's not his fault. But I think, personally, if he doesn't hit a 3 tonight, I hope he hits one early. But if he doesn't, I think he can still be useful. He is so big and tall and long. Mainly, he's just very lanky. But I think he's finding himself, and I think he's grown so much in these playoffs and just in this season of doing other things that is not just three-point shooting.
I think at this point, if you're Michael Porter Jr., you got to find something, yeah, other than the 3. If it's not working, you should be doing cutting. You should be trying to drive to the lane, trying to go force a foul to get free throws. Because, as you said, it has not been working for him. And everyone's been talking about how does he recover from this, and he's in a slump. I think you just got to go out there and play team ball. Don't sit in the corner expecting a 3. Move around and go drive. Like, I remember coming out of college, people were just like, oh, well, yeah, he's like, he's built like Kevin Durant. And I'm just like, Kevin Durant is like one of the best slashers in the league. So that's what you got to do. You got to go make plays happen. If the 3 is not there, go for the mid-range, go for a layup, go for a dunk. Just don't sit there. And that's what so many people have been giving him slack about.
Yeah, I agree with that. But, I mean, obviously we all hope that he gets this 3 slump out of the way, especially here early at home. But if not, you know, find that mid-range, that 15 to 18-foot range right now seems to be a very vital area where Miami just cannot stop whoever they want to. So just finding little ways, like Tariq said, help the team. Let's just close it in. I mean, at this point, I don't care how he shoots. If we end up with a W, all will be forgiven.
For sure. After this break, I will tell you just how I was right all along after this.
Go Mile High, your college radio for sports, movies, and games. Run by students, for students, and more.
Let's see what they can do here from the 5.
Sports news, live games, and discussions about just about everything.
Disney turning their rides and their parks into movies.
So close, so many times, and to have that snatched away.
Come and join us every day for your favorite shows, only at GoMileHigh.com.
Imagine me, a dog, moving in with a human. I didn't know how it would work. Turns out, my human is pretty entertaining. For instance, every time I give my human his ball, he throws it as far as he can. And I'm like, dude, that's your ball. So I go get it, but he just throws it. Again. I gotta say, though, the more he does it, the funnier it is. I love my human. A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
While cutting molding with a 12-inch dual-compound miter saw, while holding a newborn baby in your arms, when face-to-face with a congregation of alligators, with the ball in your hands and the entire freaking season on the line, while juggling chainsaws, there are a million places you would never consider texting. So why would you do it while driving? Please stop the texts, and together, we can stop the wrecks. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway and Traffic Safety Administration. Get the message at StopTextStopWrecks.org.
I'm working 2 jobs, and my husband works too. My kids go to school with your kids. I'm 1 out of every 6 Americans, and my family is struggling with hunger. I believe in this country, but it's hard to believe so many Americans have to choose between paying bills and feeding families. Visit feedingamerica.org and find your local food bank. Every dollar you donate helps provide 7 meals for those struggling with hunger. Together, we're Feeding America. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Jill, why don't you tell the class what you did this weekend?
Well, my dad and I went in search of some magical minnows and found a zillion
of them in the stream from our lookout rock. Then my sister and I escaped from an evil slug king and went back to my super twig fort for safety. Then we told stories till it got dark, and the Big Dipper led us all the way home.
Where were you, Jill?
We went to the forest. It's not that far away.
Ask your parents to take you and your friends to the forest this week. It's closer than you think. Check out discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Hey, Billy. Want to go to the state fair?
Yeah!
Well, you can't. Huh? Well, you see, Billy, when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have done with it. But now your parents are becoming energy efficient. They can save hundreds of dollars a year and take you to the fair next year.
I want to go now.
Aw, I know you do. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
This is the best damn sports show, period.
Reeves holding. James comes out of the pack. James on the drive. Goes inside. Stop. Shot block. Gets it back. It's over. It's over. Denver makes history. The Nuggets are going to the NBA Finals for the first time in franchise history.
Brought to you by GoMileHigh.com.
Welcome back to the best damn sports show, period, on GoMileHigh.com. We are going to switch it up, talk some hockey, because there is the Stanley Cup Finals happening. I get less people are caring because we are in the city of Denver, but I like talking hockey. I've been paying attention. I don't know how much you guys have been paying attention, but Vegas is up 3-1. South Beach / Miami, the thing where everyone's like, oh, no team has ever won it in 2 years. Has any team ever lost it the same year? Because it's currently happening. They're both down 3-1. And it's not looking too good for them.
Yeah, no, especially with Tkachuk going down the way he did. Bobrovsky, I don't know what it is in that Vegas line that is just sticking in his side. But Vegas has absolutely found the answer to Bobrovsky. And, you know, kudos to him. I may not be a fan of Vegas, but I have to respect what they're doing. It's hard to win any series in five in any sport that has a 7-game series. So kudos to them. Sorry, Florida. At least you finally won a Stanley Cup final game. It took you to overtime to get it done, but you're on the board. It's just not your year. It's Vegas's time.
Yeah, I was talking with Jack, and he was like, really, of any hockey game, it's who's the hotter goalie? Because really, it's all about streaks with goalies. Goalies are funky like that. In terms of that, Bobrovsky was on an incredible run. Like, being an 8 seed as well, like the Heat were, the Panthers were also an 8 seed. And he just got hot at the right time. But I think the magic has finally worn off. I've been comparing this a lot to the Montreal-Tampa Bay series, which was one out of the bubble. I always think it's the bubble because it was weird formatting. But it was 1 year out of the bubble where they played 56 games. Divisions were weird. It was a weird time for them, but Carey Price got so hot and got him to the finals, and then it just died out. And I think the opposite's happening with Aiden Hill. I think because he came in later, he's still on that high. Aiden Hill was a career backup going into this year. Like, he had some good times, had some bad times. He hasn't been like the goalie. And like I was telling Jack, the thing is about goalies is you want to have the best baseline. That's why Vasilevsky's so good. Because, yes, he can get so hot and just let no goals in. But his floor is so much higher than most other goalies, where he doesn't go on these extreme runs. Georgiev this past year for the Avs, he was very similar. He was incredibly steady. Like, yeah, he got hot, but his lows weren't too low. It's why a lot of backups are backups, is because they can only be hot for so long, and their floor is so much lower than starters for the most part. Going back to the Stanley Cup run last year, like, Darcy Kemper was good enough. I wouldn't say he was insane, but he was good enough. There was a few shaky goals, but he never let in the third. But like, his month of, I think it was March, or no, it was January, because it was like when they didn't lose games.
Yep.
He was just on fire. And of course, after that, you lose some games. And I think, like I was telling Jack, it's all about goalie streaks. And I think in terms of Florida, that's what happened. And then someone who was leading Conn Smythe conversations was Tkachuk, and him getting hurt. To what extent, we don't know. Hockey players are like known to just power through anything. Like, Patrice Bergeron played with a punctured lung. Zdeno Chara played through a broken jaw. It's just like a thing with hockey players, is they're like, yeah, do I have a torn hip flexor? Yes. Can I get through it? Maybe. Valerie Nichushkin last year had a broken foot. If you saw the x-rays, it did not look great. No. So I think that's just kind of where Florida's at, is they weren't supposed to be here in the first place. I think people were saying if the Penguins beat Chicago like halfway through the year, like they would be in the playoffs and not Florida. So things like that. Tariq, I don't know how much you follow hockey, but
Penguins. Look, I'm not much of a hockey guy, but I will give credit where credit is due to Vegas, because it wasn't that long ago when Vegas was a brand new team.
2018. Last time they were in the finals.
Yes, and they went to the Stanley Cup in their first year. So you don't see that too much in American sports, where brand new teams come on the scene and they breed championship rosters. So I give them all the credit in the world to do what they've done. This is their year. Like I was saying on my podcast the other day, it looks like Vegas is the place for athletes to go now. You know, the WNBA, the Las Vegas Aces won their WNBA championship last year. And, you know, Vegas is on their way to win the NHL. Now, hopefully the Raiders don't win a Super Bowl.
Stay at the bottom.
Yeah, stay at the bottom, do what they do. But I think for these other teams, people are like, oh, yeah, Vegas is the place to be. And it seems like baseball is going to be there next. And I guess it's just a great time. So,
yeah, no, Vegas is definitely on the come up. Baseball is going to take a lot to get that organization fixed, especially when the Athletics get moved there. But the other thing that I just thought of, because Estelle, you mentioned it, that Florida is essentially what's commonly referred to as the 8 seed coming out of the East. The Miami Heat are the 8 seed coming out of the East. Vegas, number 1 seed in the West. Denver Nuggets, number 1 seed in the West. Coincidence that both of these finals are 3-1? Maybe. But I just thought that was kind of funny.
I mean, I think they also had like similar problems. Like the Heat, like the reason they were the 8 seed is they couldn't make shots.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they were there. And then they started making shots. Bobrovsky couldn't save anything. He actually didn't even start the playoffs. Alex Leon did.
Yep.
And then he got pulled. And now Bobrovsky's got hot. And now the Magic's wearing off. And I think Magic of Disney World, whatever you want to call it. I mean, they're Miami and South Florida, not Orlando. But whatever. Magic of Florida is not there.
The
and
South Beach dust is just done.
I like what you were saying, Tariq, about how Vegas is the place to be now. I think the only thing that's really hurting them is they don't have a basketball team. But the no state tax is huge for players. That means they can sign technically cheaper and get the same amount of money.
Yep.
Is it meaningful? Kind of. But it's a nice weather. I feel like you can be in Vegas and even like it's not like a huge market yet. Like if you're in hockey, like no one wants to go to Toronto because everyone recognizes all the hockey players in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And same with basketball. Like if you're from LA or from New York or even Boston, like you're gonna get recognized. But I feel like there's so much happening in Vegas that is not sports related. People are there for tourism. That I feel like they can still live relatively normal lives.
Yeah, and that's one big thing for Vegas. And kind of going back to Tariq's point with Vegas, this being their second Stanley Cup appearance, they've only been around for 6 seasons. They've made the Western Conference Finals 4 times. So it definitely feels like they're going to be the first team out of Vegas to really step into that limelight of, oh my goodness, that's Mark Stone on the corner. Oh, hey, Jonathan Marchessault was having dinner next to me. You know, that kind of thing. But going back to an earlier thought I had, this Aiden Hill run is reminding me a lot of the Jordan Binnington run from the Blues when they made their push.
Similar but different in a way. Jordan Binnington was actually in the AHL.
Oh.
And one of the dumbest signings of the world was his contract that year. But yeah, he also just got hot at the right time. The St. Louis Blues in January were at the bottom of the league. Like, that's why they were playing Jordan Binnington, was because they were like dumpster fire. And then him and Ryan O'Reilly just like got hot at the right time and just crushed the way there. And then there was some ref luck. I maintain that was the worst reffing literally ever.
Yes.
But and it made them literally change 2 rules in the same like off season, which tells you a lot about things. And it was specifically reviewing rules.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it's very similar. And then the only thing was that Binnington then signed a 5x5. And when he signed that, everyone's like, that was a bad signing. And now we're here. And everyone's like, yeah, we are correct.
Seems legit, right?
You don't stake everything on it.
At least Miami, hopefully Miami doesn't be like Philly where they lose three championships in 1 year. So I understand you're about to lose two, but
I mean, those Miami Dolphins were looking a little bit interesting.
Yeah, so hopefully the Dolphins or someone else can help them get over the hump, because you don't want to be like Philly losing three finals in 1 year. So.
Yeah, well, it's kind of funny. To be fair, I don't think it's going to be the Miami Marlins for baseball.
Oh, yeah, most
sorry, the Braves are still owning that.
So. Yeah, that's the Braves division. So,
speaking of football, just a little quick touch. Two players came out today and announced that they will not be going to mandatory minicamp. That seems to be less and less mandatory. Saquon Barkley, it comes out that he's skipping it for because he doesn't want to, he doesn't like the signing. He's holding out, I think, to be signed. I don't really know what's going on, yeah, but that's so, what I was reading.
Tariq, do you want to take this one?
So basically, he was supposed to be a free agent this year, and he got franchise tagged, and so now they're trying to keep him on a deal that really he thinks that they're lowballing him. But also at the same time, it's the NFL. The NFL does not like paying running backs, because after their rookie contracts, that's when the gas really starts running out, and they don't want to pay all this money for a running back, and they keep constantly getting hurt. I understand Saquon had a good season last year, but he just hasn't been great in the terms of being healthy. So that's where he's kind of at now. So he's like, well, I'm going to hold out until you pay me. That's what Dalvin Cook also had going on, but now he's officially released, so he's a free agent. And there's two teams looking after him, the Broncos and Miami, so.
Wild. Absolute wild. And then Hunter as well will not be going to Manning camp for a similar – well, not similar. He's getting traded. They're fielding trade calls around him, and it sounds like he's like, fine, you guys don't want me, I won't play then. Make it harder for you. I just think that's interesting. It's both because organizationally they don't feel like they're respected. I wonder how much this will affect them in the future in terms of like – I bet there's an NFLPA and things like that in the next CBA if there'll be a lot more bargaining.
Yeah, it's kind of difficult, I think, when it comes to it, because you see every other position really get paid, but then when it comes to running backs, they just don't get paid. Like, running back, honestly, is probably the worst position to play in the NFL, just because you're sitting here taking all these hits, like,
yeah, your especially health to in your the legs, future.
Like, your health is on the decline playing. Like, you look at Todd Gurley. Todd Gurley was one of the best running backs in the league, and now he's out of the league, and he's in there for 5-6 seasons. It's just crazy, because you never know. And I think that the NFL needs to go together with their players association and figure out some way to get these players at least paid a little bit more, because the running backs want to get way more money, and then – their owners just don't see them as a priority, so they either ship them off to another team or they just draft a new young running back that has a lot of gas in the tank coming out of college. So,
yeah, and that's one of the big things, is that the owners are also continuing to try to manage the running back market, because, I mean, these may be outliers, but you look at Ezekiel Elliott and his extension. It was for 5 years, $80 million. He has definitely not lived up to the hype since that re-signing. I mean, you could maybe say that maybe Derrick Henry may be worth that still, and maybe Christian McCaffrey. But that's two in a field of 64, 65 running backs that are consistently seeing playing time. And Barkley, to be fair, he's had a couple of injuries, obviously, coming off the ACL a couple years ago where he only got two games in. You know, you also have to look at the injury history. It's a very murky situation out there, but I'm sure that they'll get it figured out. Saquon will be back in the big blue.
Yep, and like you said too, you can look at Zeke. He got his paycheck, and look at him now. He hasn't been signed to a team, so.
Yeah.
It's very, very interesting. That's just adding to the Jets, who are just not having mandatory minicamp either. Up next, we'll be giving you our Game 5 predictions and giving you a little bit more fun talking about our favorite moments from the Nuggets year.
Every day, across this country, hundreds of college radio stations take to the air, broadcasting music and programming that you won't hear anywhere else.
It's one of the last places where people can really be able to actually say what they want to say.
Without it, you wouldn't have a place for local artists to perform. Certain people need to have a chance, a fighting chance, and college radio is that place for it.
College radio changes the lives of those who are involved with it and can change those who listen to it too.
This is where we start out, you know, from getting all this great experience working in college radio. It makes you want to work in real radio.
College radio means finding yourself. It helped me find what I wanted to do in not only school, but in life.
So support college radio by continuing to listen to this station and supporting the students who make it happen. College radio, now, more than ever. A message brought to you by this station and the College Radio Foundation. For more information, please visit collegeradio.org.
Taking a trip over to Tibet, you know, see the sights, climb a hill or two. But I remember, oh man, I got one guy out here who I actually know. So I give an old ringy dingy to the Lama.
What?
You know, the Dalai Lama, his laminescence, flowing robes, grace, bald, striking, really. I says to the Lama, hey, you remember that round I caddied for you down in Shangri-La? Well, apparently some station out in Lakewood taped the whole thing.
Oh.
See, the Lama's a big hitter. Nailed 2 eagles in a row that day. Well, he says, what station could have possibly gotten all the way out to my sacred holy lands, the Shangri? I says it was none other than GoMileHigh.com, Lama. They got the best sports coverage in the state. The Lama actually tips me this time, 2-1. So he pretty much stiffed me again. But I got him hooked on GoMileHigh.com. So I got that going for me, which is nice.
That's great.
GoMileHigh.com.
Hey, Colorado sports fans. You're listening to GoMileHigh.com, a student-operated station live from the Colorado Media School studios here in Belmar, giving you a different perspective on all things current.
Stop torturing yourself, man. Live in the now.
So stay tuned to see what's coming up next on GoMileHigh.com, Colorado's sports lifestyle.
Showing.
Hurry, young Papsy. We must make it back to Camelot so I can listen to GoMileHigh.com.
Oh, who goes there?
It is I, King Arthur on his mighty steed. Let me in the castle at once. I must get to my quarters to listen in to the best in Colorado's sports lifestyle programming.
But, sir, don't we live in medieval Wales?
No, Popsy, you mustn't ask questions when I'm listening about my beloved Broncos. Ah, GoMileHigh.com.
This is Estelle and...
Tonight, we are the greatest hockey team in the world.
This is the best damn sports show, period. Welcome back to the best damn sports show, period. We are wrapping things up today. We are going to get into our Game 5 predictions, our favorite moments from this NBA year, because it, what a year it's been. This might be the last game. Hopefully it's the last game of the year. But first, I want to congratulate Mike Breen. I know we're not a huge fan of ESPN, but he's calling his 100th finals game tonight. Regardless, that's an incredible career, 100 finals games.
Yeah, I mean... kudos to him. I mean, there's a reason why they keep having him come back.
Yeah.
And the cast around him changes. He's the constant that you love to hear. It's either his bang or Kevin Harlan just going off, dropping random edited bleep words in the middle of people's names when they make big shots. But, I mean, Mike Breen is so synonymous with the NBA Finals now, it almost feels weird watching one without him in it.
Legend, I tell you, legend. There's been a lot of ups and down moments hearing him say bang, whether your team was losing, lost to a game winner. I don't know. Legend. What can I say? There's been a lot of good and bad moments with him saying that bang.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, you can't forget his legendary moment. Cavs down 3-1, game 7. Tied up 3-3, blocked by James. Man's a legend. You got to give him credit where credit is due.
Yeah.
For sure. Now, we're going to get into our favorite moments from the NBA year. We can do specifically Nuggets. You can kind of do whatever you want. I'm going to start with mine. I was kind of talking to you guys beforehand and in the break. My favorite Nuggets moment this season was, I'm going to call it the dunk train. It was a random game against the Indiana Pacers. The bench is on the court. So it's not like huge things. I guess the Nuggets don't really have a bench. They like stagger and whatnot, but it was mainly the bench minutes. And it starts off with a Jamal Murray alley-oop to Christian Brown, which is just like so fun to see. Christian Brown, it was one of like, it was a big moment for him. And then they go back down the other way. And then I think KCP gets a steal, passes it to Jamal Murray. And then Jamal Murray, again, alley-oops to KCP. Two in a row, ballerinas going bananas. You can hear it on the calls. Like, it's crazy. And then the final one, just like cherry on top. Bruce Brown, they come back down. Bruce Brown gets his hand to the lane, dribbles down, dunks it. Makes Indiana call a timeout. Indiana was already like down by a good much, but they like were like, okay, we gotta stop the bleeding a little bit at least. And it's just, it's one of my favorite moments because I remember watching and be like, oh my God, what is happening? And I saw someone on Twitter be like, that's when we should have known this team was built different. But that was, that's my favorite moment. Ian, you got anything?
I mean, Nuggets wise, I knew that this team was different when the AG dunk over Landry Shamet on Christmas.
Ooh, on Christmas? That was fun.
The Christmas Day dunk that sent all the Nuggets fans happy home, you know.
Well, it was just originally called a charge, I think, and then they had to review it, and I want to know if the phone call was like, it's too cool, just reverse it.
Well, that's the thing. When you watch the replay, Shamet shifted into him even more. But just, it was that moment I knew that this team, if they were healthy, we were going to get to where we are now.
It was 11:30 that night and I was working at ball and I was just like, I just want to go home because the game started at like 8:45 because it was a National League game. And that was like in overtime or in the fourth at least. And I was like, oh my God. And then you like get that and just like your adrenaline just goes wild.
Yep.
Tariq, you were saying you have your favorite moment.
Look, I got two favorite moments, okay? My first favorite moment, I will say, is the resurgence of the Sacramento Kings.
Yes. Light the beam.
I don't think anyone expected them to be in the position that they were. And they finished the season the third place in the West. And, you know, them getting De'Aaron Fox some help by getting Sabonis was like the best thing that happened to them. Like, they built a young team, and I'm very curious to see how they will play next year. I know they left early playing against the Warriors. That's a hard team to beat. But I think that the culture has changed in Sacramento, and I love to see it. And my second one, I don't know how many people are going to agree with me or not, but I would say, for me, one of my favorite players, the resurgence of Russell Westbrook. Him leaving Los Angeles, or him leaving the Lakers.
Yeah, I'm like, he kind of stayed. I don't think
him leaving
house.
Him leaving the Lakers was the best thing ever because, you know, him going to the Clippers, I got to see him happy and play ball like he used to again. It just made me feel so whole because I'm like, he still has a lot more in the tank. And I know a lot of people were writing him off and giving him so much crap because he is on the Lakers. But he went to a team that actually benefits with him. And he just balled out at the end of the season. So I love to see that.
Yeah, I think the Russell Westbrook like arc since he like joined the Lakers was super funny because it was like LeBron wanted him in and then LeBron didn't want him anymore and then like he got to go to a place that like seemingly wanted him and like actually played him properly. But I'll never get over Westbrook jokes. I think they're one of my favorites. I remember just watching him be wide open and brick it. Like, I'll always hate on him just because he's a big name and I think it's funny.
I mean, man got paid $53 million from two different teams. I mean, you get traded to Utah. Utah says, here, have $47 million. Go home. Go back to L.A. and then just move over one locker room. It's fantastic. But another story that I want to highlight, I know that we as Denver fans feel a very specific way about this. But I will give credit to Joel Embiid in his regular season just because, you know, well, the thing is, being the first MVP in Philly since AI is a huge thing because they are very diehard fans out there. We all know it. We like to give them crap for it, and it's going to continue, especially after tonight. But
I saw a Philly fan bringing up the regular season game where, Joel Embiid had his one better game than Jokic, and him being like, man, remember this day? And everyone's like, You didn't make it past the second round, my guy. I don't know why you're so like fond of this regular season game. Like, okay, I guess you guys are all just regular season fans then. Enjoy not seeing the postseason.
Yeah, but I mean, just with what he was able to do, especially not just against the Nuggets, but when he was able to turn it on, he truly was one of the best players. So it was nice watching him against everybody else.
Yeah, I think my thing with Embiid is, one, it's the fans. Mm-hmm. I hate the fans. Philly fans are just so annoying.
Yeah.
Especially because we see him so often. Like, cool warp. Because everyone was right, because Nikola Jokic is clearly better than him.
Yes.
But other than that, like, I don't think his head's in the right space.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he definitely, I feel like, cared way more about the MVP than he cared about a playoff run. Like, that's one thing you've never seen from Jokic, is him caring about the MVP. Like, that thing sits in the back of his locker where he's like, oh, I think I need to grab that, potentially.
Yeah.
And I think his head's just not in the right spot of what he wants to win, and especially like the way they went out. Like, he's the only MVP to never make it to a conference finals. I just think it's a fun stat to throw out because it's like hating on him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a valid point too, but I mean, in the same breath, I mean, we've all been kind of skirting it, just the way that the Nuggets were before that little blip at the end of the regular season.
It's because they didn't care. They need motivation to play hard, but still, clearly.
To be up 8 games in the West with a month to go, it was just fantastic seeing this team finally get over every little obstacle and this run to right now. I mean, I couldn't have scripted it any better.
Absolutely not. Now, getting into our predictions, we do have the game on our screen. All of the ESPN panelists, like their pre-show thing, all pick the Nuggets. That makes me uncomfortable because I think Stephen A is O for all. but who knows? But let's get into your game 5 predictions. I don't really need scores, just how do you think the game's going? Tariq, I'll start with you.
It's been very rare for any Denver team to really win on their home court championships. So I think if this happens, it'll be the second time ever that it's happened. So I say give it to the Nuggets tonight. They've waited, especially the fans, they've waited so long for this. Might as well do it in the city. It's going to go crazy regardless, so let it be tonight.
It's ring season in Denver. I mean, it's been since the 70s when we were the Rockets.
Since David Thompson was a rookie was the last time they were in a finals, and that was the ABA. I only know that because he was on Altitude Show and they mentioned it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's Denver's time. I think the world has finally acknowledged it. Get ready for another ring season, baby. We're going to go have a parade on Thursday.
For sure. I've been saying it all along, literally since like we knew it was Miami a little bit even before. I thought it was going to be Nuggets in 5. It just, they're wearing their City Edition jerseys tonight. They've won on that against the Suns. They won it against the Lakers. I think it's just right. I've been saying literally since day one, Nuggets in 5, Nuggets in 5, Nuggets in 5. So I'm going to continue. They're going to win tonight. It's going to be a great game for them.
I agree.
You agree?
Yeah. I mean, personally, I feel like it would have been more cathartic to be wearing the Mile High City jerseys just to keep pushing that in even further, make people think about the altitude. It's like, we still out here, but you're absolutely right. The fact that we've won in the whites, having Denver emblazed across the chest, it feels so right.
Yeah. Well, that does it for the Best Damn Sports Show period today. I'm Estelle. Tariq, thank you for joining us today. Ian, thanks for running the board. That is all. I am Estelle from GoMileHigh.com. Thank you so much for listening.